Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, everybody. That's James. I'm Kyle. I'm going to get my headphones adjusted here. There we go. All right, now I'm locked in. It's a Wednesday. James there, Kyle here, Jiffy Lube omnipresent because they sponsor the program, and we are rocking with you until noon. The Kings got yet another victory last night. They beat the Jazz 113-96. And look, the same way we aren't going to overreact to early season losses, we're also not going to overreact to early season wins. However, the last two nights against Portland and against Utah, both games felt like the kind of game that the Kings might have lost last year. Where they overlook a bad team, or they're on the second night of a back-to-back, or whatever it is. It feels like one of those two games are a game where they might have come out flat. Or particularly against Portland, when Portland climbed back into the game in the second quarter, where the Kings never quite pull all the way away. But what we've seen the last two nights, to me, is significant. Not because, oh my God, the Kings are going to win the Western Conference now. It's not that. But the encouraging thing for me here is that the Kings have gone in to games against lesser teams and controlled both of those games for 48 minutes. They've been in complete control. They've dominated. They've not done anything super different. They've not needed someone to bail them out. It has just been a methodical beatdown of lesser teams. And again, does that mean they're going to go win the West? No, we're not overreacting here on October 30th, but that is a significant sign of a mental shift for this team and growth in an area that last year, we talk about it all the time, probably cost them a playoff spot.
Definitely cost them a playoff spot. Kyle, if we go back to 2 years ago when this team just had this resiliency to them, they did not lose bad games. They didn't lose games that you thought, oh, you know, here comes the Pistons rolling into town. Kings are going to roll this team. And the next thing you know, they lose by 15.
Yep.
They didn't do that. They were hyper-focused. They lost against good teams on occasion. They didn't have prolonged losing streaks. Mm-hmm. But I also want to point this out, man. When we look at the first two games of the season, the Sacramento Kings came in and it looked a little off, right? Everything felt weird. And, you know, Mike Brown is tinkering with the rotations in the first two games. I always talk about the check-in game. Kevin Huerter's already had his check-in game. And that's what the first two games of the season were about. It was about getting another player in the fold that can have a check-in game and getting, we're still waiting for the Trey Lyles check-in game. The second Trey Lyles has his check-in game, and all of a sudden if you have eight guys that are rolling, you're going to be extremely difficult to beat. But in order to get there, sometimes you gotta, you know, go all Andy Dufresne and climb through 400 yards of filth-smelling muck to get to the other side.
Totally.
And you do. You have to lose some games. You have to, like, make things uncomfortable, because the only way this team moves together fully is if they move together with a group that is all locked in together.
Mm-hmm.
And as of right now, we're starting to see more and more of them lock in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, the starters, the only one who I think has had, like, maybe a perfect game here and there is Sabonis.
Yeah.
But overall, we're seeing, you know, these moments from DeMar DeRozan that brings you, it carries you through a really bad first half of a game, and then he helps you propel to a win. Mm-hmm. We're seeing De'Aaron Fox have some moments where he takes over. Keegan Murray has a bunch of points in a game and plays great defense. Like, we're having these moments where you're starting to see this saying what it might look like down the road. And in order to get to the finished product, sometimes you gotta start with, you know, just a piece of wood. And you got to start working on that.
Finish that sentence quick, please.
Yeah, just, you know what I'm saying? You have to, like, in order to mold something, you have to start somewhere.
Yes.
And we're seeing the beginning. And so I'm encouraged by what we're seeing.
Yeah, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. How are you feeling after the Kings beat the Utah Jazz 113-96 last night to move to 2-2 on the season, back to 500 after starting 0-4 the last 2 years? This is a big step. Big step getting to 2-2.
They're 500.
Look at them go.
Look at how many times in the past that they've been to 500.
Yeah.
It's like never. Like
we talk with the 49ers a lot about complementary football, right? That is, your defense is getting stops. Maybe they generate a turnover, short field. That's the offense capitalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Or defense struggling, they give up back-to-back touchdowns, offense stepping on the field, picking them up, and scoring touchdowns and keeping up. That's that complementary football, right? It's just a complete team win. That's the other encouraging sign for me with Sacramento the last couple of nights. It's not they went in and beat Portland 140-138, or they beat Utah, you know, 91-89.
They escaped.
Yeah. They're going out, their offense is rolling. And defensively, the last couple of nights, they've been locked in. Now, again, let's see what this looks like when they play Dallas or Oklahoma City or Denver or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what it looks like then. But for now, like, this is growth. These are positive steps where they're dominating against bad teams.
Yeah, I think it's very positive.
Yeah.
Like, and we're seeing it from every angle. You know, Kyle and I talked about this before we got on the show that this is the first time in the regular season that the Sacramento Kings have, in the Mike Brown era, held a team under 100 two games in a row.
You said back-to-back games.
I said back-to-back games.
April 14th, Portland Trailblazers, season finale last year. The Blazers scored 82, and then in the first play-in game, 2 days later, the Warriors scored 94. That's back-to-back games.
But it's not, because a play-in game doesn't exist. Those stats don't live anywhere.
It's the dumbest thing.
No one gets stats for those.
The dumbest thing.
They are. It's like an inning that doesn't go five. A baseball game that doesn't go five innings. It doesn't count.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So
just call them extra regular season games.
It's really weird.
Or call them postseason games. I don't care.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. You have to call them postseason
games.
That's
it. Yeah.
But they don't want to call them postseason games because technically it's not the post. It's a postseason,
it's
not the playoffs.
Season. It is post hyphen season. It's after the season.
Yes.
Postseason, one word, is the playoffs.
Yes.
That's the first round. Western Conference quarterfinals. That's the first round.
I think we have to make a distinction between what is postseason, what is playoffs. That might be the distinction. Like, if you're one of the top eight teams, you're in the playoffs. But if you make the play-in, you're part of the postseason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, I'm fine. Do something with those stats.
Yeah.
Do anything with the numbers. On Basketball Reference, they're listed back-to-back. That, to me, says they've done it in the Mike Brown era.
They've done it. They've done it. Either way, it's a good stat that they've held two teams under 100. And, like, look, Portland is not going to be good, and Utah is not going to be good. And
Utah stinks, bro.
Yeah, we can get into that. That neither one of these teams are going to be good at all. But they're still NBA teams with NBA players that can bust you up anytime.
Yes.
I mean, again, Portland, the night before the Kings faced them, dropped like 130. They beat
the hell out of the Pelicans.
The Pelicans, like, trashed the Pelicans.
Yeah.
So
we'll talk about the Pelicans later.
Yeah.
Kings go 0-6 against this version of the Pelicans. I want to keep talking about the Kings. But Don is on the line. Don, you're on the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. What's up?
Vibes are up is what I got to say. Red Velvet is back. DeMar just comes in, gets 20 in his sleep. I love that Domas is being aggressive so far. And Keon Ellis should never get a DNP, in my opinion. Thank you, you guys.
That's a good radio call. Nice job. Thanks, Don.
That was a good, concise radio call.
I totally agree. He brought up. Well, in fact, we'll just kind of roll through everything our guy Don just talked about. But he brought up Domas. We, before the season, tried to paint a path to one of the Kings players winning an MVP.
Yeah.
And I know we have a mutual friend who has a financial stake in De'Aaron Fox winning MVP.
That's true.
But what Domas is doing right now, and this is exactly what we said, when Mike Brown talked about, I want Domas shooting more threes, it's like, yes, that is something that I and many others have been clamoring for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Want him shooting more threes. And if he did, can he get his points from 19 a night up to 22? Can he get to 22 a night? And right now he's at 24 a game, 11 boards. Is he at 8 assists?
No, his assist numbers have dropped to 5.5.
5.5, okay, call it 6.
Yep.
If he's averaging 24, 11, and 6 on 67, 54, 76... And the Kings are a top, and if he does that, the Kings are going to be a top 4 seed.
Yeah.
That's going to get a lot of MVP votes.
Yeah, he's in the discussion.
And I know that, okay, yeah, the assist numbers are down, but I know it sucks, but like points are the thing. Points are, if you're not at 20, it's going to be really hard to go win an MVP award.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this so many times. It's like going back to the ESPN commercial, like chicks dig the long ball. Like it is, like
that's it.
You get paid in Major League Baseball by hitting home runs. You get paid in the NBA by scoring points.
Scoring points. That's it.
Yeah, and you get awards in the NBA by scoring points.
That is the long and short of it. So what Domas is doing right now, while okay, maybe the rebounding numbers aren't at 14 or 15, he's at 11, and maybe the assist numbers aren't at 8 or 9, he's at 6. But the points jumping to 24.3 a night and him shooting 68% from the field and 54.5% from three. You get into the top 4, top 3?
It just feels like every single time he walks on the floor, he is so good at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And if he has expanded what he does, if he's added to his arsenal,
mm-hmm.
man, he's going to be, I mean, all NBA is like almost foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
All-star. Like the fact he didn't make the All-Star team last year is one of the most criminal acts by the voters and the league ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like just absolutely despicable he didn't make the All-Star team last year. And, you know, I keep talking about this. Like what's at stake for Domas is like a potential Hall of Fame nod versus, mm-hmm. you know, he's at 3 All-Star games. If he gets to 6 All-Star games, he's almost a surefire Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And to hold him back in an incredible year during his prime and not give him an all-star nod and mm-hmm. give it to somebody else who, like, clearly there were a couple of guys that you could have left off the list. Yeah, really tough.
But they scored a lot of points.
That's it.
So, but during the preseason, one of the big takeaways of the preseason is like, man, Domas is so much more aggressive scoring the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we've seen this year. And it's not like he's taking 20 shots a game.
He's still
13 field goal attempts a night.
Yeah, 13.3.
Almost exactly what he was doing last year, but to me, it's A, the three-pointers.
Yep.
He's now making 1.5 a game, averaging 2.8 a game, and hitting him at a good clip at 54.5%. That's exactly why we wanted to see him shooting more of those.
Yep.
And that number will come down a little bit over the course of the year, but even if he continues shooting, what did he shoot last year, 38%? 39%?
Let's see. Last season he shot 38%, 37.9.
Even if he lands there at three tonight, he's going to be well over 20 points a game.
Yep.
And if you do that, the Kings are going to continue winning a lot. And that is where you're looking at a true like top 3 MVP candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And he's played like it, man. Like, it's not a coincidence that the Kings have gone out and you see this mindset shift against lesser teams where, hey, Domas is putting the ball in the basket. He's scoring. Other people following suit. That stuff matters, man. And yeah. I love that he's too skilled of a player to get in the lane and immediately look to pass. Yeah, that spray out to Keegan, if you got him wide open in the corner because the defense has collapsed, great. But if you're one-on-one with Walker Kessler, just go through him and score the damn ball.
Yep.
That's what we've seen, man. I've really loved what Domas has done this year.
Yeah, and I want to point out, too, like, he is, last year he shot 13 shots per game. This year he's at 13.3, so it's 0.3.
Not a massive difference.
And he's averaging 5 more points per game. And all of those points, right now he's averaging 4.5 points per game on 3-point shots. Last year he averaged 1.2. So there's 3.7 of your 5, mm-hmm. right? The other is, not only has he gone from 5.1 free throw attempts to game to 6.3, but he's gone from 70% to 76%. Yep. It's literally 1.2 points per game. The yep. difference in his stats exactly are the 1.2 more points per game in free throws and the 3.7 more per game that he's averaging in 3-point shots.
Yep.
Same player, just added one more 3-pointer.
Small wrinkle.
And a little bit more as a free throw shooter.
And those assists are going to come down. I think the assist numbers were always due to come down a little bit, having nothing to do with him all of a sudden becoming a guy who doesn't pass it, but more because, like, DeMar DeRozan, off a dribble handoff, is going to dribble the air out of the ball before he goes and shoots it.
Yeah, he does kill a couple of assists.
Yeah, there's just not going to be a ton of assists to DeMar DeRozan. And he's a high usage player, so I think that was always bound to happen. I honestly have been incredibly impressed by Domantas Sabonis this year. Even more so, like, we knew he was going to be a lunch pail guy. We know he's going to come in and he's going to have he's going to get his double double. He's going to dish out a bunch of assists. Like, we knew that. We know he's an all NBA caliber player. The level that he's gone to this year, that little tick up, is one of the things that if the Kings were going to go from good team in the West to a contender in the West, I thought that was going to be a requirement, and we're seeing it.
Yeah.
And that's been awesome.
I mean, it's 4 games in, so we have to be a little bit, like,
good start.
Yeah,
it's a good start.
It's a good start. And but the thing is with Sabonis is his ability to repeat what he does is like unmatched. I mean, the fact that all the double doubles, we can, like, kind of throw the stat out because, okay, he got doubled. But, like, 72 double doubles or whatever it was, that's just
the consistency.
It's just bonkers. It means that he shows up every single day and repeats what he did the day before. Mm-hmm. And so if he's going to be this type of player where he is shooting threes, and also, like, look, the offense has been clunky for the first, they've scored, but even last night's game wasn't like, I mean, they scored 113, right? It wasn't just a 127 game. His numbers, his assist numbers will go up as the offense gains, like, its fluidity. As of right now, it's a little clunky. When this thing is at its premium, he's going to have plenty of assists.
This wasn't something we had planned to talk about, but I'm looking at the Kings season stats right now, and I want to discuss it. I wanted to see if Kevin Huerter was on pace for a 50-40-90 season because he's shooting 55.9% from the field, 41.7% from three. Do you know what he's shooting from the free throw line? Don't look.
100. No?
Zero.
Oh, he hasn't gone to the
line?
He
hasn't shot a free throw. Kevin!
Kevin!
Get to the line, my guy!
Especially in a game where you shot like 34.
Go draw a foul!
34 one night, 25 another.
Put the ball in the deck and go foul hunting. Your team is up 25 in the fourth quarter. Get me a free throw.
It's funny. Before we came on, we were talking and I asked Kyle, hey, do you know who leads the NBA in 2-point field goal percentage? And, like,
I had no idea.
Yeah, you had no idea. Kevin Huerter is shooting 90% on 2-point field goal attempts.
Sorry, everybody. That was loud.
Kevin Huerter currently leads the NBA in 2-point field goal percentage. And, hey, just so people know, he was, like, top 5 2 years ago in 2-point field goal percentage. Mm-hmm. When he's in the mid-range or he's around the key, people forget that he's 6'7". They do. They forget. No one plays him like a 6'7" guy. And when he's creative in the key, he can score all the time.
Yeah, like, dude, his little floater's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get to our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game from last night. Shout out to our friends at Jiffy Lube. Let's see. I'll learn how to do this someday. How about Keon Ellis last night? Here's our Jiffy Lube teamwork play of the game. Keon Ellis, not really a teamwork play because this is just this is Keon doing it all himself.
Neck, here comes Colin Sexton. Head full of steam. Oh, give me that. Keon with the steal. Kings with numbers. Fox hanging. Keon there for the put back. And the Sacramento Kings crashing the old glass as they build a 12-point lead.
Shout out to our friends over at NBC Sports California for that highlight. Keon's ridiculous.
He was
really good last night. That's a great pass ahead.
He's got his pop back. That's what the finish there. Like, yeah. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
Because that hasn't been there at all.
Mm-mm.
And so
he looked so slow in that season opener against Minnesota.
Yeah, in the preseason, same thing.
Yeah.
Like everything was really intentional and he was really slow when he was defending. He wasn't fighting through screens well. He kept grabbing. He kept getting called for fouls. I mean, he had so many fouls in the preseason. To me, like, look, this is, if we're going to see this Keon Ellis,
mm-hmm.
then he will earn whatever minutes. And this is what I kept telling him. It doesn't matter what Keon Ellis scores ever. It doesn't. Like, he can't just be non-existent. But last night, he finishes with 5 points, but he has 4 rebounds. He has 2 assists. He has 2 steals. He has 3 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
That stat line is a glue guy in a nutshell.
It's exactly what that's why he was so impactful last year.
Yes.
Hitting threes at the clip he did was a bonus. Hitting threes at the rate he did was the reason we were like, hey, should this guy be starting?
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, in my case, he should be starting.
Yeah.
If he's going to knock down threes as reliably as he was, that's a bona fide scoring threat
mm-hmm.
on top of what he brought defensively. And that's where maybe, again, I don't know, I haven't talked to the guy. Maybe that's just kind of where the hesitancy was really in summer league. He didn't have a great summer league. And then early in the year was he was trying to fit a different role. It was like, no, man, what you did last year was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you need, like growing your game from I can handle a little bit better passer, a little bit better shooter. That's obviously things you're going to want to work on. But he has carved out a really nice role with the Kings where if he's going to do what he did last night, where he's super active defensively, when called upon offensively, he's going to contribute, but they're not going to run the ball through him. He did it. He's figured it out. This is his niche. This is his role. This is how he's going to be in the NBA for 15 years. By being this guy.
No,
he's really damn good at it.
I totally agree. Like the energy and the pop that he brings to the court, when you watch the Kings play and he's on the court late in the season, you saw him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
There's never a moment where he just blends in. And that's a good thing. You know, like if he can be that player, I think, you know, whatever it was that he was dealing with, you know, coming into the season or whatever was happening. And like, we can look at the way that he was a starter, wasn't going to be the starter, you know, all that stuff. Maybe that messed with him a little bit too.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, like what we need to see from him as a player in the rotation is what we saw last night.
Yep.
Like I thought he was absolutely spectacular. We've got some,
breaking news.
Well, some news here that like
it's
I haven't seen
news,
it.
Not breaking.
Yeah, it's not breaking, but I think it plays into a larger discussion. Scottie Barnes has injured his orbital fracture.
Oh no!
And he'll be reevaluated.
This is completely BS.
Yeah. So the reason I bring it up is the Kings play the Raptors on Saturday, so it sounds like Scottie Barnes might not play. And Bogdanović also had a. This is something I dealt with when he was here. A non-surgical procedure and he is out as well. So Atlanta will be without Bogdan Bogdanović and the next night you're going to play.
Is that stitches?
No, it's a surgery. They don't want to call it a surgery. It's exactly what, like, I literally had this problem.
That classic non-surgical surgery. Sure.
Yeah, he had 100%. A procedure, not a surgery. And so I wrote it. And then I sent it in, and then an editor changed the headline to Bogdan Bogdanovic undergoes surgery. And I was like, man, so I end up getting a phone call. It's not a surgery. It's a procedure. And I had to call my editor like, hey, man, what? They're saying it's not a surgery. It's a procedure. But this is a second time.
The main difference between a procedure and a surgery, this is via Google's AI bot that okay. is perfect and never makes mistakes. The main difference between a surgery and procedure is that surgery is more invasive and requires an incision into the body, while a procedure is generally less invasive and doesn't require an incision.
Okay. I just, like, if you're having a knee clean out, that's a surgery.
Yeah, but that requires an incision. So if you're cutting your knee open to scope it, that's a surgery, dog.
I don't know. All I know is that when Bogey was here, and this is agent speak, whoever his agent is does not like it to be called a surgery.
Right, because if he has 9 of these, you don't want to say, yeah, I've had surgery 9 times.
Yeah.
I get it.
But at this point, it's not like Bogey's a young man. It's not. Like, he's 32. Like, he's had some procedures done.
How many is it, you know, in the NFL, like a catch, 1 knee equals 2 feet. How many procedures equal a surgery? I think 3 procedures equals 1 surgery.
I think it's probably less than that. It's probably 2 procedures equals 1 surgery.
Yeah. Wild. We got more to get into from last night's Kings game, and we will. Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee, who is on the road trip with the Kings. He was there last night. He will join us coming up here at 10:30. But before we get to that, there was a World Series game last night, game 4. The Dodgers looking for a sweep of the Yankees. The Yankees won 11-4. Shout out to Anthony Volpe. Had a huge, grew up a Yankees fan, was at the World Series parade in 2009. Has a massive grand slam after the Dodgers had gone ahead. I believe it was 4-1. He hits a grand slam, gives the Yankees the lead. They never look back. They win 11-4. Jack Flaherty going for the Dodgers tonight in game 5, 4 p.m. Coverage begins right here on ESPN 1320. I don't want to talk about the baseball game. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about the most insane thing I've ever seen a fan do at a baseball game, and I've seen a lot of insane things.
This is crazy.
This is the wildest thing I've ever seen a fan do. This is Joe Davis on the call for Fox. If you are listening, we will describe the play if you did not see it. Here's the call.
Fly to right by Torres. Betts in the corner. Does he have room? Fights with the fan. And they're going to say that it's an out and fan interference. So an out. One gone in this first. It's the second time that Gleyber Torres has hit a ball that has ended up in fan interference in this series. He had the home
this
run
is ridiculous
into a
here.
Double back at Dodger Stadium.
Look at this idiot.
And yeah, Betts has that ball in his glove.
Look at this idiot.
This fan literally
what is he doing?
Tries to take his
look
glove
at the other
off.
Fan grab his hand.
Right.
Tries the ball
no.
out of there.
Those two fans, and I'm not, if you're listening, it's a short wall in right field. Mookie Betts reaches up into the stands to grab it, and the fans are grabbing his glove and trying to yank his glove off his hand and pull the ball out of his glove. Mm-hmm. And then the fan sitting next to the fan doing the glove pulling puts his hands on Mookie Betts to try and push him away because he's trying to pull his glove away from this guy. Here's what these guys after the game weren't like, oh my God, we're so sorry, we were drunk. Here's the quote after the game. This is from ESPN. Austin Capobianco, a Yankees season ticket holder.
Not anymore.
Said he knew he would be in trouble, but chose to grab an open Betts glove nonetheless, telling ESPN that he and Peter, that's his buddy, often discussed this exact scenario. If a foul ball comes their way, they're going to do what they can to help their team. I patrol that wall, and they know that. Eject this guy from every sporting event that ever happens for the rest of time.
Done.
That is unacceptable fan behavior.
He literally has like a bank robbery plan tattooed to his chest.
If you want to reach up, again, foul ball and opposing team going over and you want to put your hands up to try and grab that foul ball and it's in the seats,
yeah.
Don't reach over the wall, but it's in the seats, go for it, dude.
Yep.
That's your right. When it's been caught, it's caught.
Don't ever touch the player.
Do not touch him.
Don't ever touch a player.
That is insane. And the fact that afterwards, it's like, yeah, I patrol the wall. They know that. That's how the guy talks in my brain.
I agree.
No. You patrol nothing. You do not get to go to games anymore. You've lost that privilege.
Yeah, you're done.
Anyways, completely insane. The World Series continues tonight. Game 5, 4 p.m. Coverage begins. Dodgers-Yankees right here on ESPN 1320. All right, Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee. He's going to join us next. Let's talk some Kings Jazz right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm there, Kyle Madsen here. And Chris Biederman of the Sacramento Bee live from Salt Lake City, getting ready to head to Atlanta, following the Kings around like a weirdo. appreciate you jumping on, Chris. Nice little win for the Kings last night. For me, the big takeaway is not that they're better than the Jazz or that they're better than Portland, but that it felt like either of those games are games they could have lost last year, and neither game was really in doubt. They kind of went in and dominated two games they should have dominated, and to me that shows a little bit of a shift in mindset for this year's team. Is that your takeaway, or are you chalking this up as early season bad teams?
Yeah, I mean, Portland and Utah are both seem like teams that are squarely in the Cooper flag race. Mm-hmm. So, but I do think it's a fair point to make that we have seen the Kings over the last couple of years play down to their competition. And you know, those games would either be a lot closer than they should be, or the Kings would even lose a couple of those games. But, you know, last night, I just think overall, and last night's included in this, just DeMar DeRozan adds a level of stability that he's not really going to let them have those type of letdowns, because, you know, even if the rest of the guys are struggling and there's an off night from three collectively, you can dump the ball to DeMar and he can get you a good look, or he could get to the free throw line, or he could even play make for somebody else. He had 8 assists last night. And a point that Mike Brown made before the game is that, you know, Domantas Sabonis assists might be down this year overall because DeMar DeRozan's going to command the ball a lot more than anybody else since Mike Brown has been here. So that creates opportunities for the Kings, I think, to have a little bit more variability in their offense. They don't always have to be the up-tempo, fast-paced, high-volume three-point shooting team. When that's not working, they can go to a different club in their bag and, you know, dump it down to DeMar DeRozan or let him go one-on-one or playmake for somebody else. So it, and that's something that that Will Hardy, Jazz coach, talked about before the game. He coached DeMar DeRozan in San Antonio as an assistant on Greg Popovich's staff. And he mentioned, like, when he first found out DeMar DeRozan was going to the Kings, his thought was, oh no, now they're going to be able to switch up their offense and not just be that, that up-tempo, high-volume three-point shooting team, which, you know, when you shoot a lot of threes, there's a lot of variability in that too. If you have an off night, you can lose to anybody. And so what DeMar DeRozan adds is somebody who's going to consistently get you, you know, 18 to 30 points and could provide that stability that insulates you from some of that variation you can have with your three-point shooting.
Yeah, Chris, I kind of noticed in, I think, I mean, you hate to say it's a good thing to lose a game, right? But I think the way that they lost to the Lakers kind of shined a light on this fact that when things go south, you need to feed DeMar DeRozan and he needs to get to the line. He needs to take control in those situations as sort of like, especially when he was on the court, like the senior guy on the court. And I kind of feel like we saw the game against Portland start off very clunky, very weird. And DeMar, it clicked in his head, like, okay, I need to get to the line. I need to figure out whatever it is and get us moving the right way. And it seemed like that helped pull the team out of the funk. And I think that maybe that Lakers game, where they did lose a game that they probably shouldn't have, but I think it may have opened up the room for DeMar to feel like it's his place to do what we're asking him to do at this point.
Yeah, and I think it's going to take time, right? Like, it's been, you know, it was obviously clunky in the opener against Minnesota. And, you know, everybody on the Kings is fully aware of the fact that it's going to take time to incorporate DeMar DeRozan into the offense because of just the contrasting style that he plays with. That being said, like, the Kings have, I think they're six offensively through four games, like, and they're at, you know, 115.6 points per 100 possessions, something like that. So even though it's still not where they want to be, it's been pretty successful. That said, their last, you know, they've only played four games and two of them have come against teams that we presume to potentially be tanking for Cooper Flagg. So I do think it's trending in the right direction. I think Mike Brown's talked about how, you know, not having Kevin Huerter throughout training camp kind of threw a wrench into things, and there's still an adjustment for Huerter playing off of DeMar DeRozan and Trey Lyles to a lesser extent. So this is going to be a work in progress. But I think, even that being said, like, they're off to a promising start, and they're doing things that would indicate that, you know, this could be a more difficult team to play in the playoffs than it was previously, because they do have a guy who can score in different ways in DeMar DeRozan. And I think that's all by design. That's why they got him.
Chris Biederman in the Sacramento Bee joining us now, also host of the famed Candlestick Chronicles podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I've heard that. Domantas Sabonis this season, and we can talk about, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Keon Ellis having a great game last night and Kevin Huerter looking like he's getting back to form. But Domantas Sabonis through the first four games, averaging 24.3 points a night, 11 boards, 5.5 assists, is how much of an impact has his uptick in scoring? How much impact do you think it's had, and how much impact can it have on this team moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's pretty substantial, because, I mean, one thing, you know, when obviously the Warriors series a couple years ago, it was their game plan was play off him, mm-hmm. You know, play in the restricted area, let him shoot anything further away than that. And the Kings didn't really have a counter. And now you do have that counter, right? You do have DeMar DeRozan, and you actually have somebody who's better at setting up Domantas Sabonis than the other guys have been. While you're also taking some playmaking off of his plate. And I think overall it just makes for a healthier diet of offense and shots for Sabonis, instead of relying so heavily on him. You know, like, I think, what was he, second or third in the entire NBA in terms of how much he had the ball last year. And, you know, obviously he was good in that role and DHOs and those types of things, but now he is a good finisher around the basket. And so now you can optimize him in those ways a little bit more with DeMar DeRozan's playmaking. So I think that's a net positive for sure. But the counterpoint to that is his assists are going to be down. Like, his assist numbers, I think, are just going to be down throughout the season because DeMar DeRozan is going to have the ball in his hands a lot, to Mike Brown's point. I think one of the things that you're getting with DeMar DeRozan is potentially a more maximized version of Domantas Sabonis from a scoring perspective, because you rely less on him to facilitate for everybody else.
Yep.
And I think that's ultimately a long-term positive for the Kings.
Yeah, I think it is a long-term positive. Chris Biederman from Sacramento Bee joining us here on the Insiders. Chris, we saw Keon Ellis come in, and he's worked his way back into the rotation. But watching him last night, the energy, the effort, the stat line is wild. You know, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. Like, that's the glue guy this team needs. Did you see a little more bounce in his step last night? And how do you think they're going to figure this whole thing out with him in and out of the rotation? Or do you think he's earned his way back into Mike Brown's good graces?
Yeah, it sounds like Mike Brown is pretty comfortable with 9 in the rotation. And obviously Keon is part of that 9, the 4 coming off the bench. And Alex Len, Trey Lyles, Malik Monk, and Keon. I think there's, you know, the Kings are still working a lot of stuff out, frankly, right? Like, it seems like, you know, Mike Brown has a pretty young assistant coaching staff. Like, losing Jordy Fernandez, I think, is no small thing for them because of how much responsibility he had during games. And I think, you know, Jordy's was the defensive coordinator. Luke Lox is in that position now, and Luke's never done that before. He hasn't been a defensive specialist assistant coach before. But one of the other things that Jordy Fernandez did was, when Mike Brown was wrapped up in the game and, you know, coaching the game, sometimes he would lose track of their substitution patterns, their planned substitution patterns. And that's one thing that Jordy Fernandez would take care of. And, you know, I think there's been some clunky substitution patterns. I think in the season opener, when you had all those guys play 40 plus minutes, I think that was a function of Mike Brown being wrapped up in the game and the assistants not necessarily doing what Jordy did, which was just sub guys automatically when Brown was busy doing other things. So I think there's a transition period going on there. And I think Keon might have been, you know, that might have been part of the issue with Keon. And also it was, you know, it was a Kevin Huerter. Like, Kevin Huerter, the Kings view Kevin Huerter's spacing is integral to what they want to do. And Mike Brown said that he thinks Kevin Huerter's playing well on both sides of the ball right now, and that they need him to, you know, right now be that starting shooting guard. And that's kind of put Keon Ellis in sort of a weird spot to start the season. But now, to your point, James, I think Keon settling into that role, coming in with Malik Monk, you know, in the back half of the first quarter, being that sort of super sub combo guard and providing perimeter defense, I think that is ultimately a really good niche for him. And, you know, we've seen it before. Like, if Kevin Huerter struggles down the road, then maybe Keon will get back into the starting lineup. But for now, I do think Mike Brown is pretty settled on his 9-man rotation. And I think as things get moving forward, the Kings coaching staff is going to be better at handling those substitution patterns while they get used to Jordy Fernandez no longer being there.
Chris Biederman covers the Sacramento Kings for the Sacramento Bee, live from Salt Lake City right now. I know you got to run and catch a flight here in a bit, but I guess, James, we haven't really gotten to talk about this, so if you would like to also answer this question, feel free, but Chris, we'll start with you. Do you think that Trey Lyles at the 5 is just going to be the thing we see moving forward, or was that a specific matchup thing with the Jazz? Or will we start seeing him be the 5 in this kind of 9-man rotation?
I'd have to go back and look, but I think it was kind of specific to the Jazz matchup, because the Jazz had first spells in the game John Collins playing the 5. And he's pretty small for a 5. So I think that's what the Kings were doing. They just wanted Trey Lyles' mobility out there to match up with Collins. But, I mean, you guys remember, like, a couple years ago when they went to Minnesota and they had that overtime win in Minnesota, a big part of it, Domantas Sabonis fouled out. Trey Lyles played small ball center against Rudy Gobert, and you know, he spread the floor, he rebounded well, used his physicality. I think that's something, while Trey Lyles gets further removed from his injury and gets back into a rhythm, using him as sort of a small ball five to stave off or, you know, be a matchup issue for bigger, slower centers, I think that's something that can always be in the Kings' bag, because, you know, they can play five out with five shooters, and that can be, I think you need to be able to do that at some level and not lose too much defensively to win in the NBA, particularly, you know, I mean, you look at what the Celtics are doing, you look at why the Knicks traded for Cat. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants to play five out now. So I think the ability to do that is going to be important for the Kings at some point. But I think last night it was more specific to the Jazz just because John Collins was playing small ball five for them.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. The small ball five is something that is integral to like good basketball teams at this point in the NBA. And if the Kings are going to take a big step, there are going to be nights where Alex Len doesn't play. And Alex Len is a trooper. He understands what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he's more than willing to accept that some nights he won't play. Last night he played 5 minutes all in at the end of the game. I do think we're going to see more and more of it. But I also feel like Mike, at this point, his job was first to get Kevin Huerter going. Now it's to try to find ways to get Trey Lyles going. And sometimes that means giving him an opportunity to play against bigger guys that he can go out and drag those guys outside and really, you know, find his own game. And so it's a process to get these guys back on the court. Missing, you know, 5 or 6 weeks leading up to the start of the season isn't ideal for anyone. Missing 7 months leading up to the season isn't ideal. But we're seeing Mike having to figure out ways to get these guys on the court and in game shape on the fly. And in order for this team to be optimized, Kevin Huerter has to be great, and Trey Lyles has to be really, really good. And the only way to force these guys out there is, again, you just look, they just played 4 games in 6 nights. You got to get them on the court in game action because there is no practice time.
Yeah, for sure. Chris Biederman, Sacramento Bee, we got a couple more for you here. My thing with the Kings, I said 51-31 before the season. Nothing has happened through the first 4 games that have moved me off of that. Has anything happened through these 4 games that have made you feel better or worse about the Kings than you thought coming in?
That's an interesting question.
Thank you.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe I do feel a little bit better about the way that they're relying more on DeMar DeRozan to either get buckets and change up the pace of the offense versus I think the Kings were probably over reliant on Domantas Sabonis the last couple of years offensively. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big reason why their season stalled out in the playoffs and in the play-in tournament the last 2 years. I think teams just figured out ways to defend it. And I think the Kings are just frankly a whole lot more difficult to defend now. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting as the season goes on for that to look better and better. Barring injury, of course. But I think what DeMar DeRozan does complements what the rest of the guys do. And I know, you know, it's not necessarily a super easy fit because he's not, you know, the high-flying, fast-paced guy that we associate with the Kings typically. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good counterbalance. It's good to have another club in the bag. Like I said, like whatever sports metaphor you want to use, like a changeup or an off-speed pitch.
Well, you are right? A golf guy, so.
I try to be. But yeah, so I think that's positive. And I think when you can incorporate DeMar DeRozan to a point where it's taking less off Domantas Sabonis' plate, like I said, I think that's a positive.
Chris, you're on the road with the team. How much do you think they needed this early season road trip to get away? It's 8 days, but like teams bond. They go to the movies, they go to dinner, they have little planned events when they're on the road. And it does feel like, you know, you're at home for so long, you're trying to work together here. And sometimes you do need to get away from family and you need to get away from real life in order to sort of find your balance as a group. Do you think this is a good thing?
Yeah, I know they went to dinner last night. They, you know, obviously a couple days between games. I think they're probably in the air right now on the way to Atlanta. But yeah, as far as I know, everyone in the traveling party went out to dinner last night in Salt Lake to an Italian place. And yeah, camaraderie is good. I mean, I think, you know, I've asked around a little bit about incorporating DeMar, and everyone's like, he's like easy. He's the most non-difficult addition any team can make because he's been on so many teams. He's seen so much in the league. He's so constant. He's just steady, right? Everything you hear about DeMar DeRozan is some synonym for steadiness. So I think all that helps. But this is also a group, even aside from DeMar, there aren't a ton of new faces in terms of the core. Like the rotation has pretty much been intact here for a while now. So yeah, they needed the road trip. I think maybe more important than the road trip is just kind of the schedule. Like to get Portland and Utah, to get your first two wins, for that to be your first back-to-back, I think is, you know, beneficial for the Kings. Atlanta has struggled out the gate and they're banged up. They play tonight, so the Kings will have a little bit of a rest advantage against the Hawks when they play on Friday. You know, Toronto's not great, obviously. And then, you know, Miami will be a tough game on Monday. But I think even more so than the timing of the trip, I think it's the opponents of the trip, because the Kings have an opportunity to get some wins under their belt before they return home.
Chris Biederman covering the Kings for the Sacramento Bee, doing a great job. 60 seconds here. If the 49ers make one trade, I got to ask you a Niners question. You host the world's finest 49ers podcast, Candlestick Chronicles. if they make one trade, what position should they address?
I would say defensive line. And I know a lot of people would say edge, and I wouldn't have any problem with edge. But if you can get somebody who could play both interior and the outside, I think that would be super beneficial. Mm-hmm. The Jaguars stink, and they're selling off some players. Why not bring back Eric Armstead? Like I think
Sacramento
it would.
Legend.
I think, yeah, Sacramento legend, obviously, but somebody who can play outside and inside, be obviously a really good run defender for them, which they need, and provide a boost to the pass rush. You know, I think that would make a lot of sense. I don't know if that bridge has been burned because of, you know, what happened in the offseason and sure. The 49ers wanting him to take a pay cut and then releasing him and all that. But I mean, he's exactly what they need. So that's a type of player I'd go get.
He's Chris Biederman. You can read him at sackbee.com. Doing a great job covering the Kings for this entire road trip. Appreciate your time, man. Go catch a flight and fly safe.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
See you, Chris. There he goes. Chris Biederman, Sacramento Bee, Candlestick Chronicles podcast. Shout out.
It's a good podcast.
Really good podcast. Real quick, before we move on here. I don't want this point to get, this is separate from the Kings conversation we're having.
Okay.
The Jazz stink.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a good basketball team.
No.
I don't know what is going on there.
What?
You have 32-year-old Jordan Clarkson. You've got like 20-year-old Keyonte George. I don't, the
age arc is all
Lauri
over the place.
Lauri Markkanen's 28. Like everything we talked about on the Purple and Black pregame show yesterday, like everything we talked about, like, hey, this team just doesn't make any sense. All just happened on the screen last night.
You know what, man? I got to be honest. It's the same thing with the Portland Trailblazers.
Mm-hmm.
It is the same thing with the Atlanta Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
These are teams that are lost in their build. Why you have a Clint Capella and a Reese Sachet in the same starting lineup, it is like, I know they're trying to blend this thing and all that stuff, but there are teams around the league that do not have a clear vision for where they're going and who they are right now. You can write off Toronto as another team that's just really young and
Yeah. They're
just not there yet. But the other teams, you got a, you know, 27, 28-year-old Trae Young, and then yet, or 26, whatever he is, 26-year-old Trae Young, but then these super young guys, and you're trying to bank draft picks. Like, it's a lot of weirdness.
Yeah, and I understand, like, I get why the Jazz wanted to extend Lauri Markkanen. I totally get it. But at the same time, that should also be paired with, like, a Brandon Ingram trade. And then you're bringing it, and at least that now you have two guys who are all-star caliber players that you put, okay, yeah, you see kind of the... Lauri Markkanen is by far their best player, and I am not impressed with Lauri Markkanen. There was never a point last night when you're getting paid what Lauri Markkanen's getting paid. There should be at least a couple of possessions where you're like, dang, that's the best player on the court right now. Ooh, the Kings might not have an answer for that guy. And that never happened last night.
He didn't look like he was moving well. Like, yeah, I did not like the look and the feel of Lauri Markkanen. And I've always been a huge fan and thought mm-hmm. that he would be a perfect fit next to Domantas Sabonis. Mm-hmm. But what I watched last night was, oh, no, that's not, you know, I've said this a million times. People within the walls of the Kings organization for years said we wouldn't trade Keegan Murray for Lauri Markkanen. We think Keegan Murray will be a better player.
Yeah.
I have, like, early in this season, Keegan is the better player.
Yeah.
And it was like very odd to see Lauri Markkanen not look like a legitimate NBA, like near all-star level player. Just yeah. not at
I know
all.
He left with the back, left the game.
He had a back or a hip or something. Yeah.
So maybe that was bothering him and has been bothering him, but man, not impressed with him or the Jazz last yep. night. Wanted to fit that in. All right. We've got more Kings coming up. Of course, after their win over the Jazz, we'll take a look around the NBA scoreboard because a lot of interesting stuff happened in the NBA. Only four games last night, but some intriguing NBA action around the league. We'll also get to that. That's James. I'm Kyle. We are The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the healthcare you earned and deserve.